Hello, this is Jane Clark, the historian at Aintree Racecourse, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition with Alex Lefchuk.
And the weather today, highs of 15 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade. The early persistent rain will tend to ease to give a day of bright or sunny intervals with scattered showers which may be heavy. Manifestly proving that point, Rachel Warren, a little bit damp this morning.
A little bit, just, yeah. Not pleasant.
Good morning, Rachel.
Good
Welcome
morning.
To the joy of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Lincoln's First Community Radio Station, Siren 107.3 FM. Minty, you were performing, well, actually, you say you were performing. In fact, you were in many ways yesterday when we sort of touched base with your good self whilst you were actually travelling via train to York. So what were you doing then?
To York. Had a few things to do there and trying out how you can get around York as well if you're disabled.
Exactly.
If you're not using a power chair.
This is
found it interesting. Put it that way.
Well, this is it. Of course, as I say, just to remind folk, you are one of our wheelchair correspondents, and it's nice. You know, I know there's no truth in the rumour that you're actually taking on the mantle of Raymond Burr's Ironside, but, you know, it's an interesting line for that. Anyway, moving on, the Pickering game fair. We've got Toffee, who is obviously, as Rachel knows, the guide dog.
The
wonderful
yes.
thought from that. Tarka, of course, dog agility, and Jackie Hill. Set with a challenge of making nets. Where do you want
Absolutely.
To go?
Yes, well, first of all, we must feature Tarka here. But we spotted they had Have a Go at Jumatee. We went round on the Friday while they were setting up, which is always a good chance to find out everything that's going on. Found and made, of course, the challenge to make a net before the end of the Yorkshire Game Fair. So that's a challenge on. And the chap who does it, coming from Sheffield area, has guaranteed he's never had a failure yet. So we should have a fully approved net maker before the end of it.
Just holding you momentarily there, because you know, obviously we've got the World Cup coming in a few weeks' time, and there's the sort of gold nets, and then you've got fishing nets and so on.
Uh-huh,
you've got various,
uh-huh.
So I mean, what kind of net are we talking about here, and what's the purpose of it?
It depends on what you're after. The game nets, you see, it depends whether you're after a small or large game.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. But once you can make a net, really, there is no limit to how small or how large you may go. So once it's a skill acquired, it'll stay with you. And so we're going to see that we can manage to achieve it, definitely.
Okay, well, we wish Jackie all our best, and sure we'll...
I know that Old Siren FM will be with her on this challenge.
Well, Southside Broadcasting as well. I mean, I don't know, Rachel, in Bury St Edmunds, will we be behind the challenge of making a net?
Of course, yes.
There
yeah.
we are. That's okay. Yeah. It's sort of through that.
Yes, yes. Southside Broadcasting is added in, it does show, but, you know, who knows how far it will go before we
well,
end up...
Well, precisely. This was, of course, at the Pickering Showground, Saturday the 17th and Sunday the 18th of May.
That's correct,
it was the Pickering
yeah.
Game and Country Fair. It incorporated the UK Tractor Show. Did you not sort of think of giving Jackie the challenge of driving some tractors, or does she do that as a matter
of
course?
Well, Jackie is a very proficient tractor driver,
well,
so we didn't
there you
are. Challenge on driving the tractor.
I'm looking at the canine dog display team here, and we seem to actually have a kind of white, almost like a Labrador, jumping through a flaming hoop there.
Yes,
I
yeah.
so now, you know,
it's
obviously,
dangerous.
Now, I wouldn't actually sort of ask one of our midweek drivettes to do that to the whole thing. So what's going on there, Minty?
Usually done with horses.
Yeah. The horse is never going to get through that sort of small sort of space.
No, but I'm referring to the actual jumping yes. to a burning hoop. And my father and his brother, they did it with one of their ponies when they were about 7 and 8 years of age. Mm. And they did the jump into a burning hoop, yes. Unfortunately, they also set fire to an enormous amount of very valuable hay and straw belonging to their mother, which wasn't
carnage.
Exactly, wasn't exactly that which they aimed for. But they'd been highly inspired by one of the most famous people at the time in the world who did this regularly, and so they decided they would do it, and they did. And Peter, that was Daddy's pony, was the best one at jumping through the hoop, but they forgot that they should have dampened the fire down, and as I say, a huge pan full of hay and straw went up at the same time.
There you go. Anyway, it would test the dog agility, I suppose. Moving on, gun dogs, scurries and donkeys we've got down here.
That's right, yeah. Well, first of all, Coffin mustn't miss out Tarka here, but Tarka has decided over the past week, he's been building up and building up this sincere and deeply felt aspect in Tarka that he is a world champion agility dog. Despite short legs, etc., he's absolutely convinced he is, and he's been steadily improving and proving that he isn't that so far off. With once the jumps have been the standard of the length of his legs, he can certainly do it. And they allowed us to go round and round the agility course, and Tarka now goes round loose. And he jumps all the jumps and does the whole thing. But the best fun of all is that you go through the tunnel. So Jackie put Tarka through the tunnel, and as soon as he's through, and then you have to run alongside the outside of the tunnel and wait at the other end for your dog. And Tarka then delighted everybody by popping his head out of the tunnel and then trotting along behind Jackie and popping up at the front of the tunnel when he was actually supposed to be going along in it and through it so to meet Jackie at the other end. Instead, he, a bit like in cartoons and comedies or on Panto, he's behind you, you know, and he's doing that in each one. And he thought it was great fun. And he is actually, all joking aside, proving to be a very good agility dog.
But aren't dogs naturally agile? I mean, is it?
Yeah, but doing the agility courses, it's a lot more do it, a lot run off, a lot will do so much of it and then dash off in the opposite direction. The owner spends half the rest of the day trying to gather the dog back up and things like that. And they do, and a lot of it isn't, I wouldn't say it's unnatural, but a lot is exactly what you naturally come across when you've got to go through zigzags, you go through hoops, you go in and out of tunnels. And styles and such, as well as the jumps and of course the bending poles where you've got to weave in and out, so there's quite a bit to it, and he's doing it well. He's coming on, and he loves it because he thinks he can do it better than Toppy can, you know. Toppy can do it very well, but then Toppy wants to do it in order to then chase whatever's the other side, or chase it halfway through, of course. But Tark is single minded in the purpose, and he's doing fairly well. Toppy has now decided he wants to do gun dog scurry, and it came to the point that when the gun dogs are sitting waiting for it to call the lure, and they throw it up in the air and throw it right across the area, and then the dog is set off and it goes off, picks up the lure and brings it back. And Toppy was watching, he's watching the entire thing. He's never seen it before, but he was watching. He spotted where the man with the lure was. Every time he threw it, his eyes and his head followed, so he knew exactly where the point was. And then as soon as the gun dog set off, he knew exactly where the gun dog was going. Now, this got to the point we did actually have to move after a while, because when each time the lure landed, Toppy backed and jumped forward, thus letting the gun dog know where the lure was, which wasn't the point of the competition, because that was giving unfair advantage, because Toffee spotted it immediately, letting the gun dog know where it was and it could go straight to it. My whole purpose is that the gun dog has to be sent out to find it, and Toffee was faster than the gun dogs at knowing where it was, and he was telling them.
And that's just part of the flavour and the joy that happens when you actually have Minty and the Terrier team and more on the road at Pickering Game Fair. Sounds like a splendid time. But, Katie, we missed it. Never mind. We'll get things sorted through. Good morning, Holly Parker. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Marvellous. Have you ever sort of taken part or had any canines who've taken part in dog agility courses?
Not as of yet.
As I say, I think that's quite frightening in many ways, the sort of image that we actually see there.
Wow.
But it just goes to show the excitement that comes through there. And we obviously will be following and supporting Jackie, making her net. So what sort of sign? I mean, roughly, I mean, because obviously you could have a teeny wee, I mean, you could have like a little butterfly net in many ways. I mean, how big a net is she actually sort of aiming to produce on this one?
Well, the average length of the net when it's folded in and down, if we use, would be, you go by the old sort of fashion ways of measuring, when a person would measure sort of from their hand to the shoulder, you know, to give a length of work, and so it would be the average length between your hand and your shoulder is usually the approved length to do the medium sized nets. And of course, it can be otherwise any size you wish. It's for the working, you know, for what you're working for, you see.
Well, and what material is she using?
Wait, hold on a moment.
What material is it? Could be a crucial question here. Could be coming through. Who knows what could be happening? What material is there?
You use various. You can use twine. You can use, the more modern ones for making nets, which are very strong, of course. It depends, again, what you're using the net for. Lots of them have different lengths, from very small ones up to quite sizable ones. And they use them when they're out, out in the country. So it'll be the traditional actual net. Jackie will be presented with it when she finishes. Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
As long as you don't end up in the back of it, back of the net.
No. We know how to. We're not nothing like that. I know how to put something in the back of it, but certainly not.
Holly, last two questions from Minty, please.
Have you had fun talking to us today?
Yeah, but I would really like to, before I finish, just make two mentions at York.
Go on.
A contrast indeed, righty ho. One particular shop where I needed to speak to the chap who was in charge and saying he couldn't do anything because he wasn't in charge, it was head officers in charge. Big no down on that one. But a very big praise to Timpson's. They have a notice up on the wall saying, "We aim..." By Mr. Timms himself, we aim to provide the very best possible customer care that any shop could ever provide. I had reason to go there. Everything was excellent. I was actually really rather worn out. Couldn't get any further. And they actually took me to the disability taxi. Now, well, that is service.
Well done. Congratulations, Minty. We'll speak again next week. Cheers now.
CNN, from film criticism to royalty, from South Africa to London, and now to the midweek drive on Siren FM, it's Richard Fitzwilliam.
It is. And Rachel, we've just found out when we have our London journey next week, which we had thought we might sort of hook up with Richard, he's going to be in Paris. Yes. Unbelievable. You come down to the whole system and then off he goes to a different country. Still.
I didn't know. Well,
never mind. We will find alternate arrangements as we sort of pave our way to the delights of Tallulah Randall and of course, the Rebecca Hossack's Gallery exhibition, which takes place next week. Quick mention for Samantha Sheldon. Good morning, Samantha. She says, no walking to work in the sun this week. Listening to the show, the weather is awful in Mansfield.
Not particularly nice here either.
What's the weather like in Londonium, in the smoke, Richard? Is it okay, or is it just a little bit precipitous with rain and such like?
Well, very mild. I mean, it's been absolutely splendid recently, of course. Yes. No doubt about that. So,
and this
morning,
have you looked out as yet?
I look out, and slightly dull perhaps, but no rain
slightly
falling
dull.
Upon the plains beneath. No.
There we are. Excellent stuff. Okay, speaking of which, let's jump straight in before we actually do what, of course, Prince Charles is proven to do. He gets it from his father, I'm sure. Do you want to go Godzilla, or do you want to talk about Prince Charles's possible faux pas, although many people would say, well, he's right, there's just a difference of a moustache. But then other people might say, we can't say that, and we don't know what's happening.
Yes, no, but that makes it such an interesting debate. I've been listening and indeed participating. The problem, of course, with this is it does prove, in what could be called the Royal Goldfish Bowl, anything you say at any time, assuming it's a private conversation, he gave a view attempting to console, as I understand it, someone who had lost members of a family in the Holocaust. As of course, during the trip to Nova Scotia, the Prince and the Duchess are in Canada. The problem is a private conversation ceases to be so when one of the two reported to the media. Now, my feeling is that this is the last thing the Prince wanted. I don't think he wanted what he said, and I suspect that this was rather a throw-off comment, but he undoubtedly thinks it. It's got into the public domain. What should the Prince's Roe
okay.
v. It's, and all the rest
That's
of it.
That's the question. That's the question.
It is indeed.
Rachel, what should the prince do? What should he have done? What's the Rachel Warren advice for royal protocol in this particular point?
I actually haven't heard about this story. I don't know if I'm...
Well, there we are. I'm Bury St Edmunds. He hasn't even raised a flicker of interest, Richard.
Interest at all. No, it's...
Holly.
Prince Charles likened Vladimir Putin, and obviously the reference is to the way Putin is handling the Ukraine crisis, to the annexation of Crimea, and also to the possible expansion of Russian influence, and perhaps part of it, more of it, as Russian territory. And the excuse for so doing, because the Russian majority or Russian minority in parts of it, likened it to the expansionist policies of Adolf Hitler. Now that is going to cause
nice response
problems.
There. Yeah. Nice response, Rachel. Okay. So we'll give you time to actually cogitate on that little bombshell. What about yourself, Holly?
I think the thought has passed several people's minds. I don't think it's completely isolated to Charles, and I think that people are just being perhaps overly politically correct and going, we can't say that, regardless of what we think.
I mean, it's fair to say that we didn't have a lot of ramifications when this member of the team actually came up with...
Hi, I'm Zara Phillips, and this is the Midweek Drive on Siren FM.
It's fairly basic. It could have been drastic, but it's also... Maybe Zara perhaps not sort of resonant from that. But anyway, I suppose actually Prince Charles is her uncle. But you always have an odd uncle in a family. Sorry, there's another royalty thing gone.
The thing is that, of course, the prince, there's no written role. What he's done is carve out a remarkable one for himself. And, I could be talking the entire length of the programme about his charitable work.
Yeah.
But also the controversies, architecture and homeopathy, the fact he does send black spider members, as they are called, to ministers. Royals should not... They have to avoid, very, very strictly avoid politics.
Otherwise, there will be ex-royals. Let's face it, the thing is sorted out there.
There you have it.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to be moving on, but for a little treat, I kind of do these trailers for our companion team of Jeff Thompson and Emails when they have their breakfast shows on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Fridays, pretty much every other day, really. And Traffic and Travel is there. By the way, it's time. It's 8:22 and 12 seconds, or 13 seconds now. Anyway, I thought, as this ties in neatly with the next sort of aspects that, Richard, you're going to share with us, vis-a-vis a celebration of the life and work of Peter O'Toole, and also actually sort of encompasses, in a strange and wonderful way, a kind of semi-jingle acknowledgement for both Rachel and Holly. And it was recorded about 7 a.m. this morning. Are you ready for this 90-second promo of what's happening next week, with, of course, the caveat that, in fact, we should actually do a re-recording saying, sorry, Richard's going to be in Paris, France.
Anyway, yes, indeed. Ready for it?
Here it comes.
The truth is always out there, sometimes way out there, with the Midweek Drive team on Siren 107.3 FM.
This week on Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition, we take a Kryptonian special featuring not only Superman's mother, but also his cousin Supergirl, otherwise known as actress Helen Slater, who joins us for her Midweek Drive debut. Keeping the super splendiferous theme of the show going, we'll be joined by the director of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, Jane Southall, who'll be looking ahead to this year's Lincolnshire show. Rachel Warren and Holly Parker will be doing fantastic duty as ever, as will academic Musna Rahman. Adds to that the excitement of Michelle Monroe, Gemma Wayne, the author of a recent novel focusing on the Rwandan genocide entitled After Before, Jersey Notes from Anna Lewis, and Nashville's very own Cameron Tilbury, and you've got the ingredients for a genuinely super show. Did I mention we're going to Krypton? We've also got Phil Leonis in Los Angeles, plus Richard Fitzwilliams on a whole heap of other movie news, Ian Lennox with additional Tyneside thoughts, William Sitwell on food, and a whole heap of other goodies on the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition shows here on Siren, Lincoln's first community radio station, 107.3 FM, and the Midweek Drive on Wednesdays at 5 and Thursdays at 8 a.m. And normally that's normally not unveiled, normally in many ways, until the Tuesday of the show's sort of session. But I just thought, let's drop it in there. You see, because you're doing sterling duty, this name check. So we're getting there, getting there. Richard, obviously you will be on a whole heap of new movie news. You'll just be in a different country. It's okay.
Yes, indeed. And, but mind you, a pretty good, snappy trailer. I admire it. Yes,
do you think so?
I
don't like flabby trailers. I would have tightened it up a little bit. But I figured, look, it's Helen Slater, you know, Supergirl, Secret of My Success, a whole heap of other goodies, plus singer-songwriter and so on. So you've got to sort of roll out the boat, so to speak. And, of course, in Supergirl, who was the villain? He was played by Peter O'Toole and Faye Dunaway. In fact, actually, Peter O'Toole was not the villain. Let me correct that. He was actually one of Kara's mentors on the planet Krypton, who went off with the cosmic sort of thing that then led to Faye Dunaway and Peter Cook, of course, doing various shenanigans. A movie directed by Jeanne Swark, not necessarily the finest in the Superman series, but a fun show nevertheless.
On the subject of shows, on the subject of success, and on the subject indeed of Peter O'Toole, I must say it was someone who's admired O'Toole and someone who gave so much such an extraordinary series of performances, and most particularly on screen, Lawrence of Arabia, most particularly on stage, Jeffrey Bernard is unwell. Well, this was at the Old Vic Theatre. It was on Sunday, and it was a celebration of his life and work, and I was much moved by it, and I have very seldom ever in my life heard so many hilarious jokes and stories. I mean, this was wonderful. President Michael D. Higgins of Ireland, who, of course, had participated in the recent very successful state visit, he was back and played tribute to his old friend. Omar Sharif was there. I mean,
is he still going, Omar Sharif? I'm sorry, but yeah, I made it. But like Nicholas Parsons turning up to Lincoln the other week. Omar Sharif and Nicholas, well, there's a kind of ponder with. Holly, you were nodding there. Does that mean you're familiar with Peter O'Toole?
Yeah, I was actually nodding at Omar Sharif. I watched Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris last week, so for the first time in ages, and I like
and Omar Sharif, of course, immortalised because of his screen debut, which was the amazing scene as Sharif
He's on
Ali,
a camel. He's on a camel.
On a camel approaching in a mirage, approaching a well in the desert. Oh, absolutely brilliant. Well, it was very moving. There were wondrous singing sequences. There was a sword fighting sequence. And there were some readings. And whether it was Benedict Cumberbatch, or whether it was Albert Finney or Kevin Spacey, I mean, these were great names paying tribute to a very great actor, and it was full of moments of hilarity, moving moments, beautifully done, and also you learnt a great deal about the man behind the legend. We'd all seen so many of his performances. We learnt about this outrageous iconoclast. It was absolutely hilarious. It was touching. The President of Ireland gave a superb address. He's a remarkable figure with words. He's a poet and playwright himself.
I think it's fair to say that we would rate the Peter O'Toole celebration of the life and work that took place at the Old Vic.
And also Kate O'Toole, his daughter. We learnt about O'Toole as a father. She organised it, and she did it brilliantly. The Old Vic,
not to be confused, of course, Richard, with the Sean Connery line in Diamonds Are Forever, when he has a little introduction to Lana Wood, play sister, of course, of Natalie Wood, where she says, "Hi, I'm Plenty," but of course you are Plenty O'Toole, named after your father, perhaps. A little Bond line there. I won't go any further, but you know, it's a line to sort of cogitate with, which could have confused people if they're thinking about Peter O'Toole, any relation. No, not Plenty O'Toole. Plenty O'Toole, fictional character. Peter O'Toole, real-life actor.
And a truly remarkable one, but to learn how funny he could be.
You can imagine it.
Nobody very, very beautifully organised tribute to
I'm sure.
A genius.
Rachel, have you ever seen Lawrence of Arabia?
I haven't, no.
Oh, you see yourself.
May
there,
I suggest it is the ultimate cinema experience.
It's the ultimate, yeah. Or even on DVD. And no, we can guarantee that Ed Wellman, whatever he happens to be, I think he said school today, actually saw a few other things, he won't have actually watched this DVD that he actually sort of was awarded as contributor to the show last year. Have you ever seen it, Holly?
No, not yet. It keeps popping up on telly and I just keep watching it halfway through and not quite getting the start of it.
It is amazing though, with reference to DVDs, there's a DVD shop in Cambridge Circus. I spotted several copies of Lawrence of Arabia before Christmas, bought them all and gave them to friends.
There you see.
I mean,
celebrate. Exactly.
It is amazing, but it was the finest performance of its type, I think. Instead of my history, I wouldn't go that far. Well, I really was fascinated by the different aspects of the hero and the way Lean directed that film. We could go on and on and on, of course, and with O'Toole, the interesting thing is his career beginning in 1955, and the Old Vic being the place of the theatre where Laurence Olivier began National Theatre, which of course we so memorably visited the current one, but it was then O'Toole's Hamlet launched it, and with Geoffrey Bernardes on, well, one of the funniest plays I've ever seen.
We could go on for the whole day, Richard, but we can't, because we've got Gareth Edwards, who's chomping at the bit, given that he won the Sci-Fi London 48-hour film challenge just a few years ago, and he went on to do Monsters. He's done a whole range of other things.
Monsters was actually made on a shoestring. Well, it cost almost nothing. I think it was £250,000. It was an unbelievable budget, and it was one of the most successful films of the genre. And I mean, you mentioned Gareth Edwards, and before we talk of Godzilla, I've got to pay tribute to Monsters. That was marvellous.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure when you actually start off by sort of saying, well, that was very good.
No, I have to say, Godzilla will not disappoint. Yeah. I mean, it indicts man's exploitation of the planet with nuclear testing because, of course, the Muto monster is fed by radiation.
I've said the same about the swans in Brayford Pool on a regular basis. If those swans get hold of the radioactivity that's there, suddenly there'll be giant swans all over the place.
Well, this is dangerous because this in Japan, there is a form of what will be a surprise, a dreadful form of activity. And when, very tragically, Sandra, played by Juliette Binoche, dies, having been sent to investigate this by her husband, Joe, played by Bryan Cranston, well, Joe remains in Japan, and he measures the seismic activity, and he sees 15 years later this is going to be repeated. His son, Ford, Aaron Taylor Johnson, this, by the way, is part of the plot, and the plot, the film is composed, obviously, of scenes which are a story, but the main thing is not the fact that an extraordinary monster leaps out of a chrysalis and is subsequently part of the battle with Godzilla, and its fellow. The facts are, however, that it isn't what the humans get up to. It isn't the script. What it is are some absolutely fantastic special effects in the scenes where, as traditionally, the monsters do battle.
The world's most famous monster is pitted against malevolent creatures who, bolstered by humanity's scientific arrogance, threaten our very existence. Sounds like classic Georgian literature to me. What do you think, Holly?
I think it sounds like an episode of Power Rangers. You know, when they get the big cardboard villains that are fighting
an episode
the city.
Of Power Rangers. Methinks that's damned with faint praise.
I am going to go see it, though, so I'll keep my mind open. It looks good, but I haven't actually seen the original, which is really bad.
You say, by the way, that it looks good. I would point out that the poster's a bit of a cheat. We see Godzilla rampaging around London, at least I take it that Big Ben and the Houses of Parliament are supposed to be in Britain. The trouble is that he never comes here, so I'm warning you.
We don't see anything responding, looking remotely like the British Houses of Parliament on the poster we're looking at. It's like the back of his head in many ways, really. It's back of Godzilla. And no Godzuki, of course. But there is going to be a Godzilla too, so, you know, hope springs eternal.
Oh, most certainly there is. And also, I mean, there's some fabulous visuals, especially the devastation of Hawaii and Las Vegas. And there are one or two extraordinary sequences, including one where Godzilla rampages down and into an area where there are these Chinese lanterns. It's just the way it's filmed that occasionally it's absolutely fantastic. Also, the bridge in San Francisco, I mean, there you have
So the founder of Sci-Fi London, Louis Savvy, can rest easy that Gareth Edwards, his mentor work, he's come up with the trumps.
He's come up with the trumps. He's done a movie which, as I say, the plot, the script, it's... People aren't going for that.
Gigantic mutated trumps in the case of Godzilla, no doubt.
But, oh. An impressive monster. Right. Let's pay tribute to Godzilla himself. The Mutos. The Mutos are amazing. Mm. I mean, I really thought the scenes of destruction and devastation, you could have said this hundreds of times in recent years because of the sci-fi movies and the CGI, the way those effects are done. But this, some of this is really absolutely extraordinary. And, I wouldn't want to tangle with any of these monsters myself, but the fans will find this enormous fun. A B-movie plot, maybe, but... If you don't go to see Bryan Cranston and Aaron Taylor Johnson and what they have to say, what you go to see are these fantastic monsters.
I was going
monsters.
For deep, rooted ecological philosophy, personally. But in the words of Richard Fitzwilliams, Godzilla will not disappoint. Will you be going, Rachel?
I was just debating this. I'm not sure. It's not usually my...
That and probably X-Men, Days of Future Past, probably. I might do a double whammy.
Both,
whammy.
Yeah.
It'd be
X-Men.
Yeah, there we are.
And the point is, they've got... Godzilla doesn't float your boat. You could wait for Godzilla 2 absorbing social media, your friends' comments, you know, I mean, see whether or not it attracts. But there is Two Faces of January, if you like, a Patricia Highsmith novel. Also, if you enjoy seeing some, I think, very, very nefarious behavior, a plot that I didn't always buy, but it is rather interesting. It's set in 1962 in Athens. The first scene is the Acropolis, where I was at the end of last year, bringing back very fond memories, and posing extremely attractively in the first sequence are Chester MacFarlane, played by Viggo Mortensen, an excellent actor. He's a crook.
Kirsten Dunst in it. What's not to appreciate about the Two Faces of January?
Precisely, Kirsten Dunst posing too. The outfit is highly impressive, and as for Chester, dressed in wearing a linen suit, I have to say that suit gets pretty worn throughout this movie. Mm-hmm. He always seems to be in one, and Kirsten Dunst, a lot to appreciate.
Brought to you by the same people who had the talented Mr. Ripley, I believe.
Talented Mr. Ripley comes to mind all the time, because there is another
Holly's
American...
not impressed.
I do not like Talented Mr. Ripley.
It was attractive, it was fascinating, it was a movie that had an edge, it was, I thought, far more dramatic than this. And also the scenes of involving Jude Law and Gwyneth Paltrow and Philip Seymour Hoffman, I mean, it was an absolutely remarkable movie, the whole thing, Matt Damon. First class, and I would place that above this, which is atmospheric. There's a very good performance. If you saw Inside Llewyn Davis, you'll love Oscar Isaac. Here he plays Rydell, a guide who is a bit of a small-time crook, and is.
And the director also wrote the screenplay, Hossein Amini.
Does it pretty well. I would say that the first half of the film grips you more than the second. There are lots.
That's why it's got two faces, you know. One grips, one doesn't.
Always helps, especially when you've got Grecian landscapes, especially you've got Cretan ones, including Knossos, all sorts of strange things going on in the ruins there. Not entirely convincing in all aspects, but you are. One of the interesting aspects of this movie
is you're not as excited as you were by Godzilla by the Two Faces of January, but it's each to their own, as you said.
There's much to admire when you've got first-class actors, which you have here. There are rather many close-ups, which I think is a fault that you find in a large number of movies. And it's interesting that Chester is a more complex character, as is Rydell, than first appears. So as some have been comparing it to the novel, if you want to read the novel and you want to do that sort of comparison, up to you. It's so often unkind that films are compared to books, whereas in fact they can't possibly convey more.
That's why we have a couple of English graduates to launch the last two questions. Rachel, take the lead, please.
Have you enjoyed talking to us today, William?
I have indeed. I must end on a recommendation.
Richard Williams. They can be interchangeable. It's okay. And Holly, the next one.
And do we look forward to talking to you next week?
Oh, no.
Thursday, a problem, so it may well be the week after.
Different country, I know, exactly. And then Holly will be back in New York.
Paris.
Lord knows when you get together again.
Well, back in New York, you're looking forward to that?
We're back in York as opposed to New York. Yes.
None
of this newfangled colonial stuff, Richard, with respect to the Holly Parker household. Goodness sake.
She was back in New York.
I know. So good they named it twice. Richard Fitzwilliams will return. Coming up next, we'll be speaking to Susie Perry with thoughts on how sci-fi gadgets are manifesting in reality, plus Ian Lennox. But now, the association with their own very own weather forecast, Windy.